It looks like virus sufferers could suffer health effects for years, but good news, things like hydroxychloroquine plus zinc are now shown to work against COVID-19, as well as ivermectin. We're going to cover all of that. Plus, we're going to look at the difference between New Zealand and the UK, and by extension, the US. Hello, everyone. This is Dr. Chris Martinson. I'm here with your daily update for the honey badger virus. So named because it's a fearsome foe. You just don't want to tangle with it, and it can escape almost any enclosure today. So there's a lot of talk about how this is kind of like SARS and it's getting compared to SARS. And we just saw it compared to SARS up here, right? In this article, they said, well, SARS infected 8,000 people and it's kind of like SARS. Nah, it's really not like SARS at all. First, very, very high serious complication rate. And the treatment itself is very complicated, very complex. More people who caught SARS died from it. SARS Classic, I mean. In SARS-CoV-2, or the honey badger virus, it attacks many more organs and has a much wider range of complications associated with it than SARS. And it doesn't attack one lung, it attacks both lungs, you know, all of that. So it has a lot of very, very serious things going on here. This multiple organ damage, though, is that might be permanent, is really a troubling thing. Now, the good news, though, is that we are starting to get some news finally out of hydroxychloroquine. Now, remember, I've been on this for a while just saying, look, I'm not saying it works. I'm not promoting it. I wanted the data. What I really wanted was a double-blind placebo-controlled trial. I still don't have that. Okay. What we do have is we have this study that's coming to us out of these places here, out of New York City mostly. Okay. This is a pretty promising study, though. Hydroxychloroquine and azithromycin plus zinc versus hydroxychloroquine and azithromycin alone. So as you just noticed something here, zinc is the independent variable in this. Both treatment groups are getting hydroxychloroquine and azithromycin, but one group is also getting zinc. So that's interesting. I actually wanted to see hydroxychloroquine plus zinc against random control, random double-blind controls where there are other people who are getting a placebo. And then I wanted to see that because what we really want to know is how does hydroxychloroquine plus zinc or plus azithromycin, if you want, how do those compare against other standards of care? So that would have been good to know. But here, what do we get in this study? We get to see the difference between hydroxychloroquine and azithromycin plus zinc versus hydroxychloroquine and azithromycin alone. All right, what happened here? What are the study methods? What they did here, they performed a retrospective analysis of data from patients hospitalized with confirmed SARS-CoV-2 infection. So it's confirmed. Everybody had a swab and they tested positive, plus they had other symptoms. Data was collected from electronic medical records for all patients being treated with admission dates. So this was between March 2nd and April 5th. Patients were admitted to any of four acute care NYU Langone hospitals across New York City. Patients were included in the study if they were admitted to the hospital. So if they came and they left, they weren't included in the study. They had at least one positive test for COVID-19, received hydroxychloroquine and azithromycin, and had either been discharged from the hospital, transitioned to hospice, or expired. So that idea of transition to hospice, I'm not sure exactly what that means. I'm going to have to look that up, but I'm wondering about those four Diamond Princess patients who are lingering there 2.5 months later. I'm wondering if that counts as a hospice setting. I don't know what that means. Patients were excluded from the study if they were never admitted to the hospital, as they just said, or if there was an order for other investigational therapies, including tocilizumab. I'm not sure if that C is hard or not. That's the monoclonal antibody, I believe, against interleukin-6. Nitazoxanide, rituximab, that's another monoclonal antibody. Remdesivir, lopinavir, any of these antivirals down here. So if they're getting anything else, antibodies, monoclonal antibodies against certain things and or antivirals, out of the study. Okay, so that's what they did. I just wish that zinc wasn't the variable in this. I kind of wish that all those zinc plus azithromycin and hydroxychloroquine was the variable against nothing. But at any rate, here's what we got. So we can tease something out. Really cool finding here, by the way. Patients were categorized based on their exposure To hydroxychloroquine, they gave a 400 milligram load followed by 200 milligram twice daily for 5 days. That's a little more than we've been reading about before. We've been reading about 400 mg up front and then 200 mg once daily. Here they're doing it twice daily, so that's a little bit higher, but that's cool. And azithromycin, 500 mg once daily alone or with zinc sulfate. So they're using the sulfate version here with a big old load, 220 milligram capsule containing 50 mg elemental zinc twice daily, BID, for 5 days as a treatment in addition to standard supportive care. All right. So that's what they did. What'd they find? This is after excluding all non-ICU patients. Okay. So they take all the non-ICU patients and they throw them out. So that means they're actually only looking at ICU patients. So what do we know about zithromycin plus hydroxychloroquine and zinc? We know it works early. So when they say after excluding all 9 ICU patients, this is just, hey, what happens if we are giving these combo drugs to people who are already in the ICU? And the answer is no difference. 73.6% here, 74.4%, 0.93, no difference. But what happens if we exclude all the ICU patients, meaning we're going to just start with a patient cohort which hasn't been in the ICU? How did they perform as a group on zinc or no zinc? And here, check this out. 6.9% expired or went to the hospital in the zinc crew here, which was an N of 373. It's a pretty big N. You can start to trust these numbers. And compared to no zinc at 13.2%. So that's 0.004. This is a very, very significant finding right here. And it conforms with everything we've been talking about, which is if you can give this to people before they're in the ICU, that's when it's going to do its best work here. And that's what that is. After excluding all ICU patients, look at that. So I'll tell you what. If this is me, and I am me, and I end up getting this thing, I am going to want zinc plus hydroxychloroquine plus azithromycin. I would want that treatment. Now, notice here this study was really just comparing zinc to no zinc, and both groups had azithromycin plus hydroxychloroquine. I'm going to wonder if these numbers here aren't significantly better than if we had one more column over here where we could be comparing this to people who didn't have either hydroxychloroquine or azithromycin. It didn't stop the media, though, from coming out and talking about this triple drug combo. This is how this was written up in the Mail online. And it does say it helped COVID-19 patients. But they note here that this treatment regimen did not, however, change the average time patients spent in the hospital, how long they spent on a ventilator, or the total amount of oxygen required. So they're saying, you could sort of read that and go, well, maybe it didn't work. But again, it didn't change it between these two groups right here. It's not this interpretation is a little off because it sort of implies that it didn't change it for people compared to a control. So that's not the correct conclusion there, but I understand how those mistakes get made. As well, ivermectin works. We talked about this one a while back. I just want to bring this forward because I'm really trying to build a case here for a different standard of care than the one that's been promoted by, say, the CDC, by the WHO, by all those other, and all the big pharma companies who want to sell very expensive things. Ivermectin, not a very expensive thing at all. It's basically used as an antiparasitic, and it's a very common drug. It's made cheaply. So this study said, what did they do? Participants, they had hospitalized patients that had been diagnosed with COVID-19, determined by the presence of a positive laboratory finding confirming SARS-CoV-2 infection. They gave ivermectin, 150 micrograms per kilogram, administered once compared with COVID-19 patients receiving medical therapy without ivermectin. So that's it, a single dose. What was the main outcome? The principal outcome was to assess the association of ivermectin administration with survival in COVID-19. So that was their primary endpoint they were looking at. What did they find? The cohort, including 704 ivermectin-treated and 704 controls, was derived from 169 hospitals across 3 continents with COVID-19 illness. The patients were matched for age, sex, race, or ethnicity, comorbidities, and an illness severity score. All right, so they tried to match them up as best they could, make sure that some other confounding factors like age, sex, race, all that stuff wasn't explaining the results they had. Of those requiring mechanical ventilation, fewer patients died in the ivermectin group, 7.3% versus 21.3%. Wow, that's a big difference. And overall death rates were lower with ivermectin, 1.4% versus 8.5%. Very significant findings here. Super duper significant. P-value under 0.0001. So here you see that of those requiring mechanical ventilation, they had 21.3%. 21.3% died of those who were actually on got onto a mechanical vent, and not all that different from people who 22.8% in this study right here for people who went into the serious side of things. Not totally comparable, but just trying to see how these things line up. All right, conclusions and relevance. The administration of ivermectin during COVID-19 illness in hospitalized patients is associated with a lower mortality and hospital length of stay. These findings require confirmation in randomized controlled trials. Yeah, and if you had that data more than a month ago and you were in an intact culture, they'd be trying this stuff out right away, and you'd be hearing all about it. I mean, if remdesivir had had this sort of a result, stop the presses, you'd be hearing about it, be all over the news and just chirping crickets about this stuff right now, as far as I can tell. How does ivermectin work? This is the compound down here, kind of a big, clumsy-looking thing, kind of cool. And a couple of sugar groups, it looks like, there. And, just big, big fun thing. So what happens is there's important alpha and important beta, two dimers of a protein that whose job it is to take other proteins, not necessarily the coronavirus protein, but this gets hijacked for this purpose, comes in through the nuclear pore complex. So this is in the nucleus of the cell. This is in the cytoplasm of the cell on this side, cytoplasm out here, and it brings it out into the nucleus here where all the DNA is and all that stuff's happening. And so if the coronavirus protein is brought inside, it leads to enhanced infection, reduced antiviral response. And ivermectin blocks this function. And so it blocks this, and you just don't get any of this import. So the infection is not enhanced. You get a robust antiviral response. So there's something in the coronavirus life cycle which creates a protein that comes into the nucleus and does a lot of damage over here, okay, and shuts down the cell's ability to defend itself. And so ivermectin blocks that. So it's an antiviral, it's antiviral in the sense that it blocks something the virus likes to do that helps it out.
Hi, folks. Adam Taggart, co-founder of Peak Prosperity, here with good news. In his daily videos, Chris often refers to the book that he and I wrote, Prosper: How to Prepare for the Future and Create a World Worth Inheriting. It presents a practical model for living with greater resilience, and those who read it and followed its advice were much better prepared for the coronavirus outbreak than the average household. Given its heightened relevance to the turbulent times we now find ourselves in, Chris and I want everyone to benefit from this book's formula for better, more secure living. So we're giving the book to you for free. To get your copy, simply visit peakprosperity.com/freebook. We think you'll find this an extremely valuable and inspiring resource for the current COVID-19 outbreak and for being well-positioned for any kind of crisis that comes our way in the future. Thanks for listening, and happy reading.